Andrew, would you like incense?
Oh, yes, please. Thank you, Martha. Good morning, everyone. Just taking you all in again. Nice to be able to do that right there. Today, I thought, well, let's be a bit daring, shall we? And expound some secret of the stream bed. I mean, that's this retreat, right? The secret of the stream bed retreat. And it was occurring to me, kind of like you go away for a weekend seminar or something, you've got this theme, and you do a few days of activities ahead of time, then you get to the moment of touching on the main theme, yeah? And I was also considering, by normal standards, this isn't a very good weekend seminar, but by Zen standards, our standards, it's wonderful. But because, we didn't put you up in a 5-star hotel, right? We didn't take a care of accommodation for you. And your meals aren't paid for or provided. You're on your own for that. And then the secret of the stream bed, it's not a secret. It's not something you've had to wait for. It's something that's always here, always been, always being expounded. Yeah. So, yeah, normal standards, yeah. By our standards, I think, ah, wonderful. And then considering this, not daring to expound it. And how that's, well, how could you? How could it be expounded? And those aren't in conflict. Or maybe there does seem to be a conflict if I'm not daring. So let's go ahead and dare. Let's do it. What comes across to me is how we bring up awakening, how you can't really say what it is. Right? But you can give infinite examples of what it's like. And that's like the secret of the stream bed. I can't tell you what it is, but oh, I can give you so many examples of what it's like. And then we take those, an image offered up long ago, I believe, or just that came up for me. I think it was offered. That I really enjoyed. It's like you have this vast surface of water that you can't really get a feel for. Maybe it's dark water, not really sure what's there. But you take a leaf and you set it on the surface, and another leaf and set it on the surface. And all these leaves are on the surface and they start to spread out. And you can see them undulate and form this like leaf body on top of the surface. And you get to know the water that way through the leaves set upon it. So they're not really saying this is the water, but they're showing you what it's like. And that's what our sharings of our experiences are like, leaves, secret leaves placed upon the it of the stream bed. And we get to understand, well, it's what it's like. And in understanding what it's like, we get a sense of it. Yeah. So time to just place some leaves out there, by me just sharing what it's been like for me these past days, in this retreat, listening to talks, sitting in meditation, wandering through worlds of Zoomville and Homeville and nowhere at allville and all at onceville, perhaps. Yeah. So I want to go to the evening of Tenney's talk and the beach ball that was offered there. First, I think, I don't know, it was before Tenney introduced the beach ball. It was actually when he was talking about having the technical difficulties that may bump him offline. And he said something, I'm not sure if he used the word ball, but he's like, we'll have to just take care of it, you know, toss it amongst ourselves or something. But I just had this image of us, our individual rectangles, tossing a ball back and forth if Tenney disappeared, like just bouncing a ball between us. And so then he didn't disappear, and he gave a talk, and the beach ball was introduced, and many other things that flowed along and were welcomed in. So in the meditation after that talk, just sitting there letting it all settle and swim about, the beach ball came back up on the screen for me, starting to be tossed from person to person. It was kind of nice, just boom, boom, you know, in this random order, tossing the beach ball back and forth. It's like, ah, there it is. But in a few moments, that beach ball transformed into a dragon that was popping up out of one rectangle and swirling about, then diving into another one, then finding another one, popping up, then in, up and out, in and down, with the, kind of the randomness of a whack-a-mole. You know, you don't know where the dragon's going to pop up. So it was great. Oh, there it is, there it is. And then watch it disappear. So it was great. Looking at this sea of people, sea of beings with this dragon swimming in and out among us all. Then there was mention of the red thread in that time. And when that came to mind, or when it just showed up with the dragon, it was suddenly in its mouth. So it was carrying this red thread with it that was then, because of the dragon twirling and swirling, it kind of wrapped around the dragon, kind of like threading a needle. And then as the dragon was leaping and diving and swimming among us, it was weaving us together with that red thread, connecting us, uniting us. And that was really lovely. Yeah. It's like, ah, that's what's something happening with this dragon energy and this, this shared space, you know, united by the passions, the red thread, the life that we all have individually and collectively. Then that part of the poem about the moonlight and the wind coming and the ruffles and the light, but no trace of either remaining. It came up in a way of what I was experiencing was not that, as far as no trace of either remaining. It was like, oh, no, this definitely remains. Those, the weaving together, the bonding, the connection, it's there. And not only that, it wasn't that it necessarily remained. It's been there from the beginning. Yeah. It was revealed. The new weavings remain intact, perhaps. So I liked that my experience reversed the poem. It was like, oh, the traces of it wasn't really traces. It's full presence of connection, life, alive. That red thread and that dragon weaving in and out of each of us. The next morning, that having faded into the meditation at some point, and sleep and everything else happening. So the next morning comes around, and in the early meditation, that activity of beach ball, dragon, red thread, transformed into flickering candles. Just sitting here, taking in the screen with that kind of open, blurred, relaxed gaze, just noticing all the different flickerings and all the different places in our temple here. Every once in a while, a few would sync up, kind of like when you're at a traffic light waiting and there's cars in front of you with blinkers, and you can kind of sit back and watch. And every once in a while, the blinkers sync up, ding, 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 ding. And then they go back to shh. Then they come back, ding, ding. It's like that with our candlelight, syncing up every once in a while, but then not. And but all flickering, all the same light in that way. And it's a randomness. And then in its being right togetherness too, yeah. Then later in the afternoon, that light, instead of being candlelight, it was the light coming in through everybody's window. And what was really interesting is it was all the exact same shade, the exact same brightness. There wasn't anything separate about it, which it just seemed really interesting and unusual, because usually I've noticed the different shadings of light with people, but in that particular afternoon, it was all the same light in every window, in every square, in each of us. Yeah. Beach ball light. So that was one movement of what it's like with many parts, I suppose. So next is with Sarah's talk, one of the many things that were offered and mingled with me. One started after that talk in the meditation, was showing up more so than the others, and that was what Sarah said about the thusness of things, the things as they are, suchness, thusness, being dragon presence, dragon activity, dragon energy. Things just as they are, that's it, that's the dragon, the suchness and the thusness. And it was easy to just say, oh, yeah, okay. something that made sense, that resonated before it had to make sense, maybe. So it's easy just to rest in that. It's all things just as they are, is dragon. The activity and the presence of dragon. And so the furnace kicking on, which it's doing right now. Dragon breath. And the incense floating through the air. That's dragon floating through the air. And the noises around the house, creaking and cracking, and the drips that I was hearing on the window well here, and all of that dragon presence and dragon activity. And my responses to it, my noticing it, that was it too. Yeah. Everywhere. Just the dragon. With ease and openness, vastness. And then that played with Sarah bringing in Wu Wei, which is a common translation, is not doing. But in the sense of not being a subject, being an entity, the not doing something or nothing. Nothing doing is nothing as the actor doing. Yeah. The Chinese character for Wu is the same one for emptiness, vastness, nothingness. So it's like the activity, the way of Wu Wei, the activity of emptiness. But what happened here was the Wu got replaced with dragon, or in Chinese, long. So long way. It was dragon activity, dragon way. That's what it became, everything happening, the doing of the dragon. And as that spread out and settled in, and the various happenings and things popping up on their own, just noticing dragon, 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 a seamlessness began to develop where there wasn't like a thing popping up and then another thing popping up. There was just dragon with all the activities and happenings happening. And that was nice because then the noticing and the naming didn't need to be happening. It was just there before noticing and naming occurs. And that carried on into the lunch break. And the seamlessness also turned into, well, the seamlessness being like the thing between myself and another, whether it's a person or a bowl of soup, the edges no longer being there, the seamlessness, the edges, no such thing. But that transformed into the edges around containing me also disappearing. So edgelessness, openness, everything, like a uniform, a seamlessness everywhere, not just between things, but nothing holding things in, which is, it can be pretty delightful. I've always enjoyed that when things are just not quite working because the edges are falling apart. I mean, I was there in the kitchen and needed something for the fridge, so I went to the cabinet. No. And then needed something from the drawer, so I went to the fridge. Oh, no, that's not it. And then it took on a new one yesterday. You know how you you leave one room and head into another to get something, then you forget what you came to the room for? This was, I was in the room where the thing was that I needed, but I headed to a different room. I was like, wait a minute. Was already where it was. I don't need to head to the bedroom. It's in the kitchen, you know, that kind of thing. And just, yeah, delightful for me, playful and just no use trying to hold it together now. Just keep following it and hopefully the food will make it to my mouth without too much of a mess, you know, that kind of thing. But it also isn't delightful all the time, not necessarily pleasant. Sometimes that can be quite unsettling and frustrating. And difficult. But that doesn't mean something's wrong. That's just, sometimes that's the way it is when the edges fall away and the seamlessness is there. It's difficult. Or it's joyful. But there's just that deep kind of resting in that. And as whatever you are when that is happening. Resting in that too. Oh, I'd also, with Dragon on the mind, walked by our son who's watching a video on the TV, and there was this great, big, long, scaly creature on the screen swirling about. And I looked at it for a moment and said, "Is that a dragon?" I thought, "Oh, how synchronous, yeah." Turns out it's just a planet-eating worm, but good enough for me. That was dragon enough for me. Planet-eating worm, so that was part of it too. Then sitting after eating and gazing out the window at the falling snow, which eventually did come and then stopped and then came back, just noticing at that time there was... It was that small kind of icy snow just falling straight down pretty steadily and somewhat quickly. And then the flakes started getting a little bit bigger and the wind would blow. So the straight down stopped going so quickly, but also when the wind blew, it shifted about and moved from straight lines to wavy lines. And there's like, oh, there's that transformation of the dragon right there. Snowflakes. Yeah. And then birds outside squabbling about something that I'm pretty sure I have a good story about what they were up to. But it's great to listen to them and then actually stare at them for a while and see how they negotiated the terms of what they were doing. And it seemed to work out okay. And yeah, so right now it's like, oh, that seamlessness is still here, blah, 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 rambling on. But that was just really nice to be in that place. Of dragon everywhere, no edges, no separation. Planet eating worms and birds and snow, welcome included. And it relates to a facet from Megan's talk yesterday evening. The dots connected more so later after hearing her talk and being in this experience of at some point Megan talked about just being open, falling open is what the words I have now, just fall open and let it fall through you, fall into you, fall through you. And that felt like that open, seamless space. Just open and let it fall in and fall through, whatever it is. And it occurred to me, that includes me. Let me fall through that openness of me and into and through. And there was something in the same way of when Sarah talked about the thusness being the dragon, kind of okay. When I heard the fall open, there was kind of, oh, I can do that. Like the story from Hakuin, when he talks about the Buddha, infinite light residing in your body, and talks about all these kind of really like dazzling description of this. And then the woman there says, oh, this isn't so hard. So I like that. Oh, I know how to do this. But part of it for me was connected to Megan speaking of the ocean and that smell and taste of salt. Well, I could smell and taste the salt of that place. Yeah. And then part of why it's felt a personal resonance and maybe an ease with it is because literally, in a figurative way, I am ocean. My Dharma name, my teaching name is Bright Ocean. And so I was like, oh, I know how to be the ocean, a vast ocean, just lying back there, letting things fall in and through. So I was appreciating the connection with that Dharma naming, which for me had been a journey. My name has transformed over the years. When I first took refuge, David Weinstein was the teacher I took refuge with. And the name that he offered, gave me, was Bright Wave. And on my Rakazu, he wrote, many waves, one great ocean. Then a few years later, I made a rakazu with Joan in mind. And so she just decorated it with the same name, and she wrote this poem. Each wave rises with its own shape from the great ocean. Each wave has its own light. Each wave is entirely ocean. So reconnecting with those verses on those rakazus and thinking of the old creek and the light that we've been hanging out with, each wave having its own shape and each wave being entirely ocean. I just felt a connection there. Then when I was named a teacher, the name that I had was upgraded or transformed into Bright Ocean to kind of speak to that wider place. Still Bright Wave, because it's all waves there, but also the ocean and the bright. And I liked to play with, in the light of what we've been doing, to let the dragon play there and let dragon be inserted there. So Bright Dragon or Dragon Ocean. That affinity there. So I invite you, you know, with Dharma name or not, replace one with dragon, whatever your name is, and see what that does, what kind of a connection it is to own the dragon in you in such a way. Yeah. And the other thing about the whole Dharma name, the spirit of it is, it's simultaneously an expression of something that is. This is what we endeavor to do when we offer Dharma names, to capture and speak to something that is, but also offer an aspiration, something to grow into, or to keep nourishing and growing and expanding, which feels very much like before anyone remembers, before you know who you are, you've got a name, you've got a Dharma name. It's already there. And the activity of singing and dancing it into the world, you get to grow into that name, you get to grow it further. And so, yeah, the activity of something that already is, that is constantly becoming, continually becoming, and the dance of that, that was spoken of earlier in the retreat. And what connects with that is another, what happened when Megan brought the letting things fall in and fall through. I went, oh, that's how it gets into your marrow, which is what Megan had spoken of earlier in the talk, having, it's already in your marrow, deep in you, which has that same sense of before anyone remembers. Before you try to figure it out and get to it, it's already in your marrow. So I really love this, the juxtaposition of it's already in your marrow, and by opening up now and letting it fall in, it gets into your marrow. So it's already there and it keeps coming there. It's always in your marrow, but your marrow is being refreshed and enhanced and moving on and on. Not set, not fixed. Yeah. So another, something already there and also growing and becoming more of what it already is. And then the place I found myself in last night, following Megan's talk, and since, still there, I'm feeling, including all the other things happening, was, I'm calling it Dream Navalville. I just found myself deeply in that place, as Megan described, that place, that in-between place that drops down and connects to the unknown. Yeah. From Freud. But what occurred to me was our navels, our belly buttons, our evidence, our badge of honor of our connection to Mother. And so in this case, what came to mind was the connection to the dark, mysterious, dark female enigma, as it's sometimes described, the yin energy at the source of all. Yeah. So this dream navel place, being that place in between the vastness and what we are as we manifest, you know, that place in between the two, being deeply connected to Mother, creative energy, birthing, abiding, in that deep, dark, mysterious way. And that's what we are, you know, falling into and connected to here. I also, because I was wanting to get a little, it's like, okay, what was that dream navel thing? You know, because of the openness and the seamlessness, I looked it up a bit and also came across, you know, how they have dream interpretation. Apparently, I don't recall ever dreaming of my belly button, but maybe I have. But apparently, that's one of the things. If you dream of your belly button, this is what it means. And so that happened to pop up when I was looking up the other definitions. So I'd offer this, which is actually pretty nice, I think. To dream of a belly button represents awareness of yourself not having to notice anything wrong with yourself or someone else or a situation you are experiencing. No noticeable problems. Feeling good, being perfect or carefree in some manner. So I really love that. Deep in this deep mystery connected to that vast unknown in a dream state, It's a place where there aren't any problems. You're just fine. Everything is, yeah. Deep in that great mother, vast, dark, mysterious connection. And then because of dreams, well, I got a couple dreams to, well, one dream to speak of. It was the one I had last night, the one that came last night with all of this material in me, having fallen into me, letting it fall through me. Briefly, it was just, I was there and there was a man there. He was kind of a anonymous, all-purpose guy, energy presence guy. So nobody specific identified with him. And also there was a woman present, and she took on identities of sister presences in my life. And it wasn't like one and then the other, it was like one step was one of these people, then another step was another person. So just that dynamic female energy with the male energy that was just kind of solid and burnt. So they were there. They were my companions. And there were happenings going on that were, well, they had that, now I think of it, that's kind of troubling, but also exciting and delightful at the same time. So not a problem, but still something to be done. And we were getting ready to head to, there was a ceremony happening, a joyful celebration of some sort happening for Joan. And so that's what my companions and I were, you know, going through the things we needed to go through to go and let's go to this ceremony because something's happening for Joan. So I never saw Joan in the dream. She was just there, and the idea of, well, we're going to get there and see that. And that was whole and complete of itself, you know. Maybe that's the presence of the deep, dark mystery and the unknown. We know there's a celebration to be had, and we're going. What will it be? Let's see. Yeah. So that dream was there. Also that sense of, like I said, there was trouble, some things get over, but nothing really wrong. That's just the way life is. You go through it like that. The belly buttonness of it in the dream interpretation. And the last thing I want to bring in is just a koan that showed up amidst all this. And then, like, it showed up yesterday, but it made more sense after looking up the belly button dream and having my dream and talking about all this. It makes more sense. It's to do with Daishan. And it's a longer story, but there's only this one part I'm going to speak of, where he traveled for a long ways and then was referred to go see a teacher who taught at, the teacher's name is Longtan, which means dragon pool. So the temple is called Dragon Pool Temple. And the teacher is called Dragon Pool, as is the custom. So Daishan gets there and says, for a long time, I've heard about Dragon Pool. But now that I'm here, I don't really see a pool nor a dragon. Longtan says, ah, you have truly arrived at Dragon Pool. And to me, it's that, it's the seamlessness. It's like, well, if you could see dragon and you could see Dragon Pool, then you would be outside of it looking at it. You have so truly arrived, you don't even see it. You don't even notice it. It's right here. Yeah. So, ah, you have truly arrived at Old Creek. You are truly in the secret of the stream bed. Don't need to notice it. Don't need to see it. You're truly in it, seamlessly, thoroughly, vastly. Yeah. Just like this, just as you are. So there's a whole bunch of leaves, my likes, what it's like, this secret for me these past days, and will continue to be laid out there. And I don't have any way or really a desire to try to wrap this up and say, and what I'm, and give it to you. It's like, well, that's it. That's what it's like. That's the great thing about stories of what it's like. You don't have to end those. You just get to keep letting the likeness of it happen. If that even, I don't know that that makes sense, but I think you get what I mean. So just keep noticing, and I'm hoping, I'm trusting, you know, as you think about right now and these days, you've got some stories, maybe some dreams, some what it's like of your own you'd like to share. So thanks for listening to my leaves. I'm going to leave them with you. Haha, pun intended. Again. And we can just settle into the space and notice and see what arises for you. And as you wish, you know, raise a real hand or a virtual hand, unmute, and just share a little what it's like. You don't have to give a, don't have to provide every example, but if there's one or two things that you've noticed that you'd like to set upon the waters of our gathering to help us all get to know what it's like in that deeper sense, please do. Yeah, Martha.